The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined this morning by Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail, and Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, to look at all of the stories making the news this Saturday. And it is fortuitous that we have Jack Horgan-Jones with us, because it is thanks to him that some of the stories that are making the news are there, most particularly one relating to face coverings, because there's a lot of discussion in the papers this weekend about politician safety and protests and all of that. The front page of the Irish Daily Mail talking about Hildegard Nocton and saying she was frightened over online threat of 6 stitches. We will get to that in a minute. But one of the responses to this was a bill suggesting, or the promise of a bill, suggesting that face coverings, balaclavas, anything along those lines, would be made illegal in public. It is turning out to be complex in its delivery and implementation, and challenging to get done before the election. That is according to you, Jack. What have you discovered?
Yeah. So this is so often the case with high profile legislative interventions, because they follow on from a high profile incident. In this case, we had mass protesters outside the homes of several high profile politicians, Simon Harris, Radhika Gorman, also from the opposition, Paul Murphy. And we also had the preponderance of face coverings being worn at high profile civil disturbances. So the likes of the riots in Dublin, the disturbances in Coolock earlier on this spring. And the reaction of the political system to that was to say, look, we're going to ban face coverings at protests. But the Attorney General, in my understanding, has offered advice on this, and while he has given a broad strokes green light to it, that it is constitutional in line with existing legislation, he is saying that it's complicated, that there needs to be more consultation in the course of drafting the heads of bill, and the corollary of that is that those heads of bill, that outline legislation, when it is put together, will obviously need to be subject to some significant degree of parliamentary scrutiny as it goes through the process, i.e. go to the Oireachtas Justice Committee. Jim O'Callaghan, the chair of that committee, is saying he wants to see it. The problem with all that is, obviously, within the next week to 10 days or a little bit longer, we could be facing down the barrel of a general election. So,
Are you in the week to 10 days camp?
Well, that's where the consensus is.
Is there a consensus?
I'm not making any predictions. But so the point is that, like, there's the political imperative here to do something, the political reality of the legislative process, and then the hard ceiling on legislative action, which we all know about. So if I was to bet, I would think that this is not going to get done by this government if there's in any form an early general election in November, December. Maybe if it goes all the way through to full term, but I think this may be one that falls by the wayside despite all the political tension that fell on it.
And is there an appetite to get it done?
I think so, yeah, I think so. But there's also a balance to be struck, and it is difficult here, because obviously the right to protest is something that is safeguarded in the Constitution and nobody wants to inhibit that. There's also complexities around the use of face coverings in other contexts, and the fact that a guard will have to infer, or will have to say basically, that this is being done to intimidate or to evade prosecution. So there's not going to be an outright ban. It won't be the case that, you know, you are banned from wearing a face covering at a protest or in any other circumstance. A guard will have to say, you have to remove that because I believe you're doing it to evade prosecution or investigation or to intimidate. And then it's the failure to remove that upon direction by a guard that is the offence.
But here's the thing, Jack. I mean, would there not be a power there, an implicit power in the Gardaí already to say, I believe that what you are wearing or what you are doing or by your behaviour, you are acting in an intimidating way? Please take that off.
So this is part of the issue as well. There is a whole wealth of legislation ranging from, you know, the Public Order and Criminal Justice Acts, the antisocial behaviour orders and so on, which is already in the armoury when it comes to tackling these kind of offences or behaviours, I suppose. The guards themselves, this is what the politicians are saying, the guards themselves have requested this power to do with face coverings because they do see it as a novel departure. It's the preponderance, it's how frequently they're seeing it. And presumably as well, the degree to which it frustrates investigation as well, post facto, because we've seen the policing approach of protests has been the subject of a lot of public commentary, and I think that the after the fact investigations, you know, the use of footage and so on, is more important now than previously it would have been about wading into the crowd, grabbing somebody and pulling them back out and prosecuting them thereafter. Now it's about kind of letting it play out, perhaps to an extent, and then going after someone afterwards. But obviously that becomes a lot more difficult if you can't.
Are we not going to end up in a situation where, I mean, I can see how this works if, as was the case, you have a lot of people showing up in balaclavas. But presumably what they will do is just migrate into wearing COVID masks because they say, this is now, I'm concerned that I might catch a cold, and a pair of sunglasses, having the same effect, but being able to argue in court, it is my God-given right to wear a medical mask if I choose.
Ironically, being mostly the same people who would have objected furiously to being required to wear masks 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, you see, that is the difficulty. But clearly, the point is the Gardaí, to some extent, will have discretion in this situation.
It's all in the mind.
My position is that they do anyway. Surely they do. If they feel that somebody is dressed or behaving in an intimidating way, do they not already have the power to say, well, that, you know, you've got to address that, take that off, put down that banner, take off that offensive T-shirt or whatever. It just seems...
I would also suggest that in some of the protests where they have the discretion to intervene, the defining characteristic has been a reluctance to use that discretion.
But you see, I think the point Jack is making too is that with the body cams now, you know, the fact of having face coverings would thwart that to some extent. Whereas, so they wouldn't need to be as proactive in the teeth of a protest if people's faces were uncovered.
Oh, they can simply walk around, take the evidence and then deal with it when things cool down afterwards.
The escalation as well. I mean, we all know that kind of being masked can kind of presumably give someone a bit of a feeling of internal license to do more, and the de-escalation effect of a guard going up and saying, take that off, and being unmasked or unmasking yourself, you know, can perhaps go some way to de-escalating like tensions in the moment. That may be some of the thinking underpinning it. But look, as I say, the timelines here are the really important thing, and whether or not they actually get it done or not.
On that timeline, are you in agreement, Brenda, with that commitment or with that prediction that Jack made there?
Not a prediction.
Nailed his colours to his mast about the election.
I don't know. I mean, I see again today, I think in the Mail, there's a suggestion the next week that the
well, that's the that's Stephen Donnelly's suggestion anyway, yeah.
Will that not leave Micheál Martin out on a proper limb? Because he is definitely saying there is work still to be done. I mean, is he being wrong-footed by the Taoiseach?
Although presumably he has to say there is work, but he can't say, well, we're kind of wrapped up, he can call it anytime he wants.
But I mean, it's going to look very, I don't know, is the word untrustworthy or duplicitous if they turn around in a week and say, you know what, we've just had a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Having sworn in a hole through an iron pot.
But I think the Taoiseach doesn't want to go yet, you know, and I think that there's every good reason for him to, from his own personal interest or his political interest or his party's political interest, there's every good reason to hang on a little longer because Simon Harris is so far ahead in the polls. You know, the longer you hang on, the more you can chip away at that lead, the more the shine comes off the new energy, and the more likely you are to be on closer to level pegging come election time. But there's risks inherent.
Well, that's the thing, is the counterpoint, not events.
The well-worn analysis of going, hopping over the winter and all that entails. So, yeah, look, I think that clearly Micheál Martin is not convinced. And we're going to, those conversations, we believe, are likely to begin to be had as of from Monday onwards between the leaders, because they're going to have them sooner or later.
Now, this goes to whether or not now is a good time politically. And one of the issues is the performance of the main opposition party, that being Sinn Féin. And Brenda, there are two stories relating to Sinn Féin. One on the front of the Irish Independent: Sinn Féin member quit party after texts to teenager. And the Indo reporting that a Sinn Féin member resigned from the party after allegedly sending inappropriate messages to a teen. There is that. And then there are stories inside, I think, in the Mail, in your own paper, of a Sinn Féin member suggesting that they were limited in what they were allowed to publicly ask the leader of the party and feeling aggrieved because of it. Whatever about the merits of the two individual stories, it is a continuum of bad news and difficult challenges for Sinn Féin, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just looking at Matt Cooper's column in the Mail, and he's saying, you know, while talking about the story that has kind of convulsed the Northern Sinn Féin, particularly about Michael McMonagall, whether that would have any traction with voters in the South. But he's more or less saying, you know, it'll definitely resonate with floating voters. And those are the people really that Sinn Féin needs to get over the line. That, and as you say, the drip, drip. And the other story you're talking about today is
just come back in on that mic a bit, Brenda, if you would.
Sorry, Patricia Ryan, who has resigned from the party because she said two things. First of all, she said she was limited in what she could post on social media. She had attempted to post some observations about an illegal encampment in the Curragh. and she was asked to take that down. And she said that also questions that she wanted to put to the leader were vetted in advance. She said that's not the way a democratic party proceeds. So, you know,
why was she surprised? I mean, it's not like Sinn Féin has a long history of being uncontrolling of its party. I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way, but one of the things that Sinn Féin has a good reputation for is being able to corral the troops and get them to all speak with one voice. So why would this shock her?
Well, it seemed to have. It seemed to have. I mean, that was her reason for resigning. But she said, I was just wondering about the timing of that, her social media post about the illegal encampment at the Curragh. You know, as we know, that since the local elections, Sinn Féin has had a little bit of a rethink on, I presume this is an immigrant camp. Sinn Féin has addressed that issue a little bit more robustly. So I wonder I'm not entirely clear when the timing of that particular post might have been. But as you say, there is a bit of a drip of negative stories that will affect the sort of people Matt is talking about, the floating voters, and might have some input into the Taoiseach's thinking on an election.
Particularly Jack Horgan-Jones, when what Sinn Féin needed was effectively, and they said it themselves, was a bit of a reset. They came out of the locals and the Europeans, they took an unexpected kicking, and there was a sense, I think, that Eoin Óibrín's sort of big seminal housing strategy document would give them the impetus back and get them back on the front foot. It doesn't seem to have worked, and this continues to be the kind of stuff that they would dread running into an election.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with almost everything Brenda said, with the exception of it being a drip. I think it's nearly a flood now at this stage, you know. You're right, there was an effort over the summer to do a strategic reset, but I don't think any of it really landed. I mean, the housing policy did get a lot of pickup and a lot of discussion, but I don't think it fundamentally moved the dial. And I think that was shown in the first round of post-summer polling, where Sinn Féin was still kind of, you know, around the high teens, and there was no kind of demonstrable uptick in their performance. Now, I thought, having seen that at the time, I thought, right, okay, they may be bottoming out here. And my expectation was that they'd start to pick up again as they head back to the general election, nowhere near where they were in the mid-30s a couple of years ago. But, you know, that they'd kind of hit low 20s and perhaps them begin to build a little bit of momentum going into the general. But these stories, I think, are really properly damaging. The Michael McMonagall stuff in the north, it's not a northern story. It goes to the core of culture and leadership in Sinn Féin. It was a slow burn down here last week because we're still dealing with the budget, but over the weekend it really took off, and it's going to be front and centre of the Dáil next week. There's time set aside for child protection statements. Sinn Féin has tried to shift the focus back to the party's government, but I think there's an apples and oranges there, because they're talking effectively, as far as I can tell, about previous forays government figures, or government party figures rather, have made in the courts, character references and so on. That doesn't speak to the same kind of issue which relates to the current leadership of Sinn Féin, how they've handled things and how the party is currently culturally addressing things. And that's why I think, you know, why Jennifer Bray's story on the front page of our own paper about the stuff in Kildare South, clearly riven by conflict, come and tearing itself apart, people being told not to ask difficult questions effectively of Mary Lou McDonald. Again, that speaks to, I think, an unease with a lot of people, a lot of voters have, as Matt Cooper's saying, the floating voter, about the culture within Sinn Féin. And it reopens all those kind of questions. You have then the story on the front of The Independent this morning by Fionnán Sheehan talking about inappropriate texts to a teen by a Sinn Féin member. And when you read the copy there, you know, it doesn't obviously identify the person, but it says the former party member in question was personally and professionally known to Ms. McDonald and attended meetings with her on a regular basis. Ms. McDonald held the individual in high regard and respected their work for the party. Now, it does seem the party moved quite quickly on this, so they receive a complaint in the 11th.
And undoubtedly Mary Lou McDonald will say, as leader of the party, she has a relationship with a vast spectrum of party members in her professional capacity.
That's true. There's another line in it, though, that says the Irish Independent understands there was contact from the party with the individual at a later stage. So after all, this has happened as well. So look, there's a lot of trailing questions, trailing legs there, all of which means, you know, in the round, we're sitting here talking about things that are bad for Sinn Féin a week after the budget, when they should have been out much more in the media talking about things that they want to talk about, beating up on the government.
Well, this brings us back to where we started, Brenda. If you are sitting between... I was going to say Eamon Ryan, Roderick O'Gorman, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, and you're doing the way up that says, OK, is now the time to go? Can it get any worse for the opposition? Can it get any better for the government?
I'd say on balance, I'd go now, because, as you say, there's been not just a drip, but a flood. And I see Patricia Ryan, for instance, referring back to how poorly the party were listening to their grassroots back in June and around the time of the family referendum, said, we told them this is not, we're telling them this is not what people want, and they just weren't listening. And I mean, that has always been fundamental to Sinn Féin's appeal. We're the ones, we, you know, we're the ones with your true interests at heart. I don't know, do you hang on, see if it gets any worse, or maybe give them a chance to recover? I mean, memories are pretty short. A week is a long time in politics, to coin an old phrase. So you never know. I think if I was him, I'd be inclined to go in the next.
What do you think is the public desire? Would people generally prefer to say, look, can you take politics away, get us through the winter, and when we have a bit of spring, let's deal with it then? Or is there actually an appetite, or does anybody care?
No, I think people do care. I think they're talking about it. But whether or not there's any great enthusiasm for an election now, between now and Christmas, I don't know.
I mean, there certainly is within the political system, I think. People want the Band-Aid ripped off. People are genuinely tired. You know, there's 5 years of government, you know, and government is difficult, not to, you know, world's tiniest violin and all that. But like, you know, they, and also because of the momentum and pace at which things have been done since Simon Harris was made TJ, people are kind of saying, look, I can push myself as far as Christmas or, you know, a little bit before. Mm-hmm. But the idea of going over Christmas and then another few months and then an election.
I imagine it'd ruin your Christmas too if you had this hanging over.
Certainly ruin mine.
Jack, Brenda, thank you both very much. Jack Horgan Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, and Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.